Good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Tappet and I'm here in the studio with Lauren Landis and Patty Fink, and the late Alex the intern will be joining us in just a few minutes, I guess. He's going to be a little bit late, but he's going to stick with me for the whole polka show because I'm doing polka alone today. And, you know, it's not a talk show. You would think, people think I'd get nervous going on the air doing this. Nah, this is easy. Polka alone, not going to be pretty. Today is, by the way, the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Wedding Expo, the GLBT Wedding Expo. It's being held at the Warwick Melrose Hotel. We'll be there. Are you going to be able to stop by? Ron, you're not going to be able to stop by. The last week, you two. I'm going to stop by at right after the polka show, so I'll be there about 3 o'clock. Be there for a little bit. Runs till 4 o'clock. Then the Lone Star Ride is having its sign-up today from 2 to 5 p.m. at Saloon, which is on Cole. It fits you. If two of you sign up, there's a 2-for-the-price-of-1 sign-up, which is a great bargain. Lone Star Ride is held the last weekend of September. And I'm going to be riding. Are you going to ride, Patty? No. Are you going to be riding, Lauren? No. I will call in that day. So, two of you. It's like... we have a guest today. His name is John Paul Buckmeyer. And if the Buckmeyer name sounds familiar, John Paul would say, oh, please, we're not talking about it. But John Paul, his dad is Judge Jerry Buckmeyer. And
hero in our community. Hero.
And he's here to debunk that. No. But I just mentioned the Lone Star Ride is having its sign-up today from 2 to 5 at Saloon, and you were involved in the first AIDS rides.
That's right. One of my jobs that I write about in the book, Alphabet City, is
you've got to tell why you were here. The
Our
real reason why you're here.
Is John Paul Buckmeyer. He's the author of the new book. I have it all written right here, don't I, Patty? It's really right.
Stick to the script.
I'm doing polka alone today.
He also has I'm David Taffet, so he needs these notes.
I do have that here because I forget sometimes.
We got a whole hour to get this out there, so I don't feel pressured.
The name of the book is Alphabet City, My So-Called Sitcom Life. John Paul is the son of Judge Jerry Buckmeyer, and he wrote and produced the movie Gay TV, The Movie. Welcome, John Paul.
Thanks, David. It's great to be back here. These are swankier facilities.
It is. Welcome back to Lambda Weekly.
Yeah.
The last time.
So he was here when back at the crack house.
He was in the crack house.
I enjoyed the crack house.
Oh, we love the crack house. We miss the pigeons.
Yeah.
I miss the pigeons.
Yeah. I do too.
Don't miss the staircase.
No. Scary.
It was dangerous getting up to the studio.
Yeah, it was.
We were just talking about, I just mentioned the Lone Star Ride is having its sign-up. This is the 10th anniversary of the sign-up. You moved up to New York and became a publicist.
That is correct. I moved up there thinking that my life was like Mary Tyler Moore. I was moving to the big city and following a dream and just happened to fall into a job as a publicist for which I had no training or background. So I worked for some celebrities like Tyra and Whoopi, and then at the glamorous magazine publisher Condé Nast. And so the book is about those sort of experiences.
Now, one of the things I realized, I mean, we've been writing back and forth, and he calls himself Mayor and I'm Ro, but what I realized was, you know, a lot of the jobs that I've had have been retail, and actually one of the things I've always been good at in retail was I did the window trimming.
You're the perfect
Rhoda. I'm Rhoda.
Yeah, you're the perfect Rhoda.
Absolutely.
You're the perfect Rhoda. So, I wore this Peter Pan collar just for you today.
Except Mayor, you moved to New York, and me, Ro, lives in Minneapolis-Fort Worth.
I know. We switched locations,
right?
Yeah. But did you toss a hat?
I did toss a hat.
You did.
I toss a hat every day about being lucky to survive in the Big Apple like that. So...
But you didn't just work for Lone Star Ride, not Lone Star Ride, for old AIDS rides.
Right, I did I did some public relations for Tanqueray at one point and managed all the media relations for the Tanqueray AIDS rides that took place in Boston, L.A., and then when they did the first one here in Texas. Yeah, I was part of that. So it's super inspiring. Like, that was one of my favorite jobs, actually. Like, I really learned public relations working on the AIDS rides and love the riders and what you get out of it. So definitely encourage everyone to
And now what we get out of it actually is money.
Yeah.
Because they're incredibly profitable now, finally. Yeah, the original ones weren't. And they got kind of a bad rap because of that. But these AIDS rides are fully underwritten by a couple of different underwriters who support this kind of thing, and all the money the riders raise go directly to the agencies.
Right, and that's what you mean by profitable.
Yes, yes. I don't mean profitable making money for people. It makes money for the AIDS Resource Center and for AIDS Services Dallas and AIDS Outreach Center in Tarrant County. Wonderful organization, wonderful fundraiser, and a great way to really get back into shape. I'm just starting doing my bike riding again, and John Paul, your dad, and let's just get into this. Your dad.
Let's just do it. Ask me right off the top.
Yeah, your dad was Judge Jerry Buckmeyer. Mm-hmm. Tell us about his original decision.
He is a hero here and to many in the U.S. in the gay community for his decision in 1983 to overturn, to declare the Texas sodomy statute unconstitutional in a case known as Baker versus Wade. He was one of the first federal judges in the country to do so based upon right to privacy reasons and a very thoughtful and thorough 80-page opinion. And so he was heralded a hero here in Texas. And in fact, as we were talking about, that's why Dallas's Gay Pride is actually in September, and it always commemorates the decision that actually came out in September of that year. So yeah, quite the visionary.
Okay, so on the cover of your book, there's a picture of you at 12 years old wearing high heels.
No, that I'm four.
Oh, you're four.
Okay,
no.
Wow. Okay, I'm 12. Not 12. I'm actually four in that picture.
So you're four wearing high heels.
Oh, it's more than just wearing high heels.
High heels, a tube dress, a hat. I've got some lipstick on. There's like a whole, there's a necklace. Lots of accessories going on.
But your father had no clue what was going on with you.
Right. You know, surprising, right? Like when you look at pictures like that. And, you know, for so long, one of the amazing things that he did was I was 12 years old at the time that case was going on. And he made sure that I was in the courtroom for the arguments and that the oral arguments that were going on in the courtroom. I knew I was gay at the time. And I remember what a gift that was to be in the courtroom and listening to those arguments, where I got to really see someone like Don Baker, who was a professional and a really wonderful human being, and really being able to envision a life for myself that was as successful and as wonderful as Don. And so I always felt like that was like one of the biggest gifts that my father gave me, was to be in that courtroom during that. It turns out that, and the press actually in Dallas wrote about the fact that I was in the courtroom at the time. That was like a big deal. In fact, I think it was the Dallas Voice who actually wrote about that.
Because you were so young?
Because I was so young, and it was revolutionary at the time, and why would the young son be there? And there were lots of questions about, like, well, the young son must be gay. But it turns out, in fact, that my father didn't know that. He was making the decision based upon purely intellectual, legal reasons, and it wasn't until many years later that he, when I came out to him, and we had our issues about it. I think I'm pretty honest about it in the book. I think it's surprising to a lot of people that a public figure like my father, who is such a hero, very privately had a different set of personal issues when he was confronted with it personally.
But there's a lot that happens with that. I mean, no matter how open and accepting you might be, you still have this kind of vision for your kids and perhaps grandkids, and you have this picture all laid out that you've grown and developed over many, many years. And to come to terms with that doesn't necessarily mean he's not going to get there. It just means in that moment, he's in another place.
And in addition to that, isn't that what a judge is supposed to have done? Separate his personal beliefs to follow, what I guess their interpretation of the law. I mean, this is, like you said, this right to privacy.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that makes him a more interesting person, actually, to see him. He's more complicated than just this heroic figure. So I think that, I think it's interesting to people what I write about him, because it's salacious and not to take away from anything that he has done, but because it's sort of my personal story. And I think it's interesting to people to see, you know, even in a family that is known for being, like, really open, like, you still have a lot of challenges coming out, and it's still a long road. So that's I think it's – I hope that it's interesting to people in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's that whole issue. I was just thinking, if this had happened today, we're 12-year-old in the courtroom listening to these oral arguments in the pivotal case about, you know, the Penal Code 2106 in Texas – you know, the right wing today would probably say, that's like child endangerment to put a 12-year-old there to listen to that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you get to see them, you know, just getting all upset.
Yeah. And well, it was at the time. I mean, he, you know, that was a very controversial decision in Texas, and there were a lot of death threats made, and we were under a lot of security around that. And, you know, I think the other interesting thing, David and I were talking about this earlier, is that when you're a teenager like me who is sort of coming to terms with my own sexuality, it's something that, like, you don't expect suddenly for your family to be on the forefront and suddenly, you know, you're super public, right? And so I remember being a teenager and, you know, stealing up the courage to come down to Cedar Springs and walk into Crossroads Market and, you know, walk up to the counter to buy an Advocate magazine and, you know, think I was like, you know, it was my own story. It was what I was dealing with. And but coming up to the counter and seeing, like, you know, buttons up there that said, we love Judge Buckmeyer, and, like, being a little bit worried about turning my credit card over that said Buckmeyer. So it became like he was such a hero, but it also, like, impinged a little bit on my own ability to come to terms with my sexuality and not and be such an out public figure. So there's a lot of complications with it. It was, you know, it was tough.
Yeah. You know, and like we were talking before, that's not just you. My first partner's parents were two of the founders of PFLAG, and they started going to this meeting that had just started up in Greenwich Village on a monthly basis, and they had just started going. Well, when John, my partner, when about a year into this, his brother came out, and the two people he couldn't tell were his parents. Because, not that he was afraid of a bad reaction, but, no, they're doing that for Johnny, not for me. And, you know, he wanted his own relationship with his parents. So it's always a complicated thing, even if you're not going to get, you know, you certainly didn't get blowback from your father about, that's just a horrible thing for you to be, and, you know, you're going to whatever, you know. It wasn't a religious problem you ever had with him, you know, deep-seated,
Well, you know, you hear a lot of celebrities talk about, the children of celebrities talking about having to, I don't know, carry the weight of what their mother or fathers may have done. So did you, in addition to, you know, come to terms with your own sexuality, which is a whole separate issue, but because you do have a father that's a public figure, did you kind of think, okay, now I have to be, I don't know, do something as grand as he did or, you know, rise to that level instead of, like, you know, creating your own path? Did you have to deal with that?
It's funny when you were just talking about that, because we talk about, like, you know, I think of my life as a sitcom. The book is called Alphabet Sitting, my so-called sitcom life. And when I lived here with him, I always felt like I was in the shadow of him all the time. And I actually gave him his own show that I call Courtside Manor. And I was just a minor character in what was a legal drama and that was called Courtside Manor that was all about him. So I think my coping mechanism was to always see things through television, because I just grew up on 70s, you know, television programs. And so he got a drama. And I eventually went off to chart my own path, which was a sitcom. I was ready to get out of being in a drama. I wanted a sitcom life. So...
And interestingly, Mary, Lou Grant went off to do a drama after being in a sitcom.
Totally. Well, so, I do call him in the book. I say he's a cross between Bob Newhart and Lou Grant, with a little not as tender maybe as them as a parent, but that's how I styled him as. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and you're kind of laughing about this. You make fun of it in the book, like the first time you went to a therapist, you were expecting to be going to Bob Newhart.
Yes.
I wonder how often, though, we do that kind of thing, where our expectations of what is going to happen is really shaped by what's on television.
Well, I think, I mean, definitely, Laurent, we were talking before, because I was saying, you know, people don't actually believe that, like, when I moved to New York, that was the height of Friends and Seinfeld. And so my worldview really was sort of shaped by my New York experience was going to be part of that, you know, Friends. And so I actually gave my life the name Alphabet City. And I talked about my life as things would happen in a show called Alphabet City. I had friends who lived because I lived in the East Village, and that's what they called, that was the slang term for the neighborhood, so that's what I thought it just sounded like a good sitcom name. I had friends who lived in Brooklyn in Prospect Heights, and we called their show Scale in the Heights. And so we used language of sitcom all the time when we would get together and talk about our lives, and I was always the lead-in to Scale in the Heights, and sometimes there would be joint episodes where we would get together. But yeah, we very much, like, I talk about it as, like, it was my own personal coping mechanism to think of my life that way. I like the fact that I think of my life as a sitcom because I think that makes it a little more funny. I get through things. So as when you read the book, like we were talking, you know, there's celebrities in it, but the celebrities are guest stars, and it's not a snarky tell-all because they're characters in a sitcom. So, you know, Whoopi is generous, and Tyra is the wonderful listener, and Ashley Judd is a, you know, amazing humanitarian, and Terry Hatcher couldn't be sweeter, and Gloria Estefan is, you know, glamorous. And so when you read the book, like, it's much more about them having fun in my show and me learning things from each one of them in the show.
We're going to go into a couple of the celebrity stories, but we'll do that after the break. But, it's not just a New York thing. If any of you know anybody who was not from Dallas, especially while that show was on the air, they didn't see you as living in a city. I mean, you could live in Houston, and that was a normal city. But Dallas, weren't your friends the Ewings? Didn't you grow up with everybody who was wealthy because there was oil right here in downtown Dallas, right?
Well, I'll tell you what. When I was living in West Texas as a kid, there was a commercial on TV with Southwest Airlines had just, like, started. And Schlumberger, which is an oil services company, out in West Texas, where there are lots of oil wells, and many, many people work in the oil industry, they had this you know, hot little thing come out in orange hot pants, and she said, "If you don't have an oil well, get one." And that was their whole tagline.
I love it. And I so, want you one.
Know, you know, and there were people in a county north of us that where everybody had a royalty check. Mm-hmm. You know, wow. On a routine basis. So it wasn't inconceivable to me to watch this on television and think, oh, we should get one.
Well, I do recall when I was in junior high, we had some new students that were from Massachusetts, two girls, and both of them said that when they first moved to Texas, and particularly Dallas-Fort Worth, they were so surprised to see skylines because they thought from the show everybody had horses and lived in big white houses like they did on the show Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Well, we saw that our really horses, did they get jammed on 635.
That really did shape the way people thought of Dallas. And I'm like, nothing could be further from the truth.
Of course.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I always loved, like, Sue Ellen and Pamela were always shopping at Neiman Marcus. Like, so I think I identified with them, like, because I love Neiman Marcus. I miss it in New York. So, I think that part of the show was realistic, right?
Mm. No? But if you go to South Fork Ranch, the house is like tiny.
It's not that big at all.
It's real small.
Yeah.
It's not that small. It's big enough. So not for five adult couples to live in with all their kids like they did in the show.
Right.
So in your sitcom,
yes,
did you have camera tricks? You know, like with this house on South Fork Ranch.
You know, I was really lucky to land a really large apartment set, as I call it, when I got to New York. I had not the typical New York experience of living in, like, a really small little place. Like, I actually landed a really large two-story place with a backyard.
Monica's apartment.
Yeah. But remember, Mary had, like, a crazy apartment too, right? Like, that was a crazy apartment. So, like, when I moved to New York, I was like, I want an apartment like Mary. And, like, I landed one that was really large. I had to fight a group of Japanese Power Rangers, no joke, who wanted the apartment and were willing to pay in cash for it. They were dressed in leotards like the Power Rangers. They were, like, young kids from Japan who were coming for a year.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 FM, HD1 in Dallas. We'll be back with more with John Paul Buckmeyer right after this.
If you're having a hard time selling that old car truck or just don't want the bother of selling it, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can help. Just call 817-KNON-AUTO or donate online at knon.org. It's so easy when the tow truck comes to your home and picks up the vehicle. They give you the paperwork that you'll need and relieve the stress of what to do with the old car that won't sell. The number to call is 817-KNON-AUTO or donate online at knon.org.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink, Lauren Landis. Alex the intern is on his way, or at least he better be, because he's doing the polka show with me.
I want to meet this character.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Sounds funny. He sounds like a sitcom character, right? No, maybe he never shows up. He's like, no, he's like the doorman in Rhoda. Like, you know, see him.
You only hear him.
Right, yeah.
Today is the GLBT Wedding Expo. It's running at the Melrose Hotel, and we are one of the featured sponsors of the Wedding Expo. So you can pick up a KNON bumper sticker there. You can meet not Lauren or Patty, because they're not going to be there. They're just too good for this, apparently.
No,
me, but I the do. One who I do. Isn't married,
yeah, that's what I find kind of ironic about this.
We'll be there later after the show.
Maybe it's a good place to find someone.
There you go.
I don't
see?
Think it's
other
the GLBT
interested in getting
Cruising
married.
Expo.
I don't know.
You never know.
Our guest today is John Paul Buckmeyer. He's the author of the new book Alphabet City: My So-Called Sitcom Life. Patty, your question was, not being
oh,
a New
just,
Yorker.
Just in the break, why is it called Alphabet City? And here I was thinking it might be that GLBTQIIAA, you know, that we do.
Yeah, no, it's a
and
good
it's
question. So it's a slang term for the area of New York that's near the Lower East Side, and the streets are named after letters in the alphabet. So it's Avenue A, B, C, D. And so it picked up the slang name Alphabet City. It's actually not used very much anymore in New York. You can kind of know a New Yorker based upon what they call, most people just call it the East Village now, but like if they know it as the Alphabet City. In fact, the person who gave me the name for the sitcom Alphabet City is Whoopi Goldberg, which is the opening of the book, is we were talking before. It was the funny story about when I fell into being a celebrity publicist and I really had no idea what I was doing. And the company that I worked for was based out in Los Angeles. I was the only employee in the New York office. So my job was always explained to me via phone, sort of like Charlie's Angels, right? So I called my boss Busy Bee, and he'd call me up and explain to me what I was doing. So he sent me to Whoopi's apartment to do what's called covering an interview, which is basically sitting in the next room and listening to everything that goes on so you can verify it later. Whoopi didn't like people to like be in the same room. So I was really nervous to meet Whoopi because I idolized her and had written several screenplays for her. And so I was like super excited.
And it was
to go see her.
Your first time meeting a big celebrity.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
On
this yeah,
did they tell you as a publicist, did they tell you ahead of time this is who you're going to?
Yeah, so my boss called me up and said, hey, so your first assignment is to go to Whoopi's apartment, and you're going to do...
What a first assignment.
Yeah. And he said, and you're going to cover the interview. And I said, I don't know what that means. And he said, you're basically going to be sitting next door listening. And I was like, oh, that's eavesdropping. I'm really good at that. I can totally do this. And so I go there. I'm really, really nervous. And I go up in the elevator, and I think that, like, obviously that I'm going to come out into, like, a waiting room or, like, a maid is going to meet me or something like that. But the doors open, and Whoopi's standing right there. And I'm sweaty and nervous, and I don't know what to say. And I was like, hi, I'm John Paul. And she's like, I hope so, or else security's going to pot in this building. And she takes me into the living room, and she couldn't have been nicer. We were like, I mean, she was so nice. You could tell I was completely nervous. She asked me how long I'd been doing the job, and I think I lied that I'd been doing it for a while. And so the guy came to do the interview, who's a London journalist, and she sent me into the next room. In the study. And so I'm sitting in there and I'm listening to the interview. It's going on a really long time. I'm getting really bored. I'm looking around, and high up on the shelf in the in there is her Oscar for Ghost. And I immediately have flashbacks to growing up here in Dallas and running around the backyard and, like, acting like I'm winning an Oscar. And I just thought, like, are they heavy? Like, are they as heavy as everyone says they are?
I hear they're pretty heavy.
Right? So I was like, well, here's my chance, right? So I walk over. I'm kind of short. It's, like, out of my reach. And I finally get my fingers onto it. And her crazy cat jumps out of nowhere onto my head and starts screeching. And I'm screaming. And we're having this whole tussle. It's like I Love Lucy, actually. And I'm, like, just really trying to hold on to the whole thing. The cat digs its paws in, and I drop the Oscar. And with this huge thud on the ground,
oh no!
I stop screaming, the cat stops screaming, and the interview has stopped in the next room. And there's just silence, and I'm panicked, and then I hear Whoopi say, everything okay in there? And I was like, oh, yeah. I couldn't say anything. And the interview started again, and I'm sweating. I pick up the Oscar, and I'm just, like, furiously trying to think, what am I going to do? Have I damaged it? Am I going to have to sneak it out of here and find another one and get it back in here? Like, all this stuff running through my head. And the interview's over, and Whoopi comes in, and I'm grasping onto the Oscar, and she walks over to me like I'm some crazed criminal, right? And she's like the SWAT person come to talk me down. And she, like, tugs the Oscar away from me and goes and puts it up onto the shelf and turns back to me with a smile and says, "It is heavy, isn't it?" And I...
So you were simpatico.
Yeah, totally. And she gave me a hug, and she said, "Hey, kid, everything's going to be fine for you down there in Alphabet City." And I thought, when I got in the cab and left going home, my first thing I thought was, she's so generous, I'll never forget that. And the second one was, she just gave me a name to my sitcom life. And so I started telling my friends that story, and that's actually how it started. I was like, she's like a guest star in my life that's called Alphabet City. So it just started from there.
That's wonderful.
Have you ever run into her again?
I've run into her a couple of times, but I never worked with her again. Like, I never actually was assigned to do anything. And I always think that she never told my boss that I did that. But now I'm thinking, because I never worked with her again, there might have been a reason why, like, I never got assigned to do anything. But I've run into her, but she wouldn't remember me. She wouldn't remember me.
I was going to ask, did she even recognize you?
No, we crossed paths at events, because I worked with other celebrities, like Terry Hatcher, and we would be at the same event with Whoopi, and... You know, but she was more interested in talking to Terry than she was me. Like,
you know, you're saying she's not going to remember you. I think you remember goofy people who've come into your life like that.
Right. Well, I always say, and I say in the book, like, that was an Emmy caliber performance she put in. So I think she picked up an Emmy on Alphabet City. So I think she'd probably remember the star
of the show. I think she would.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, you describe these celebrities seriously as being, you know, just really genuine. Usually when you read stuff about celebrities, and like the stuff that Laurent, we'll get to the Entertainment Report in a second, that he reports on, it's not at their finest moments.
No, it's dirt.
It's not when...
Yeah.
You know, don't sugarcoat that or anything.
Yeah, like that. It's not little pieces of their real life. And in real life, people aren't always just mean to everybody or, you know, demanding and, you know, and big stars. I think most people are like Whoopi and... You know, she really, when she said, "Yeah, it is heavy, isn't it?" I think she's as impressed with the fact that she has that Oscar up there and knows the value of it. You know, symbolic value of it.
Yeah.
Know? And then, wow, I really do have one of those. Huh, somebody who came into my house really is impressed that I have that. You know, geez, so am I. You know, and I almost think it's like being almost embarrassed that she had, not really embarrassed, because she should be proud of it, but, you know, humble about it, I guess, is a better way to put it.
Yeah.
Isn't she one of those very few actors out there who's has, like, a Grammy, an Emmy, a Tony, an Oscar?
She's one of nine people.
Like Rita Moreno, and there's several out there. Bette Midler, I think, is one of them, you know, that kind of makes. That's really impressive. So she's how heavy was it?
It was heavy.
Like, I mean,
it was
how heavy.
It was like seriously heavy.
5-pound bag of sugar.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, because it's also complicated by the fact that the cat was on my head at the time. So, like, I don't know. And I'm swatting at it with it. I'm lucky I didn't kill the cat with the Oscar I was swatting at it.
So which was heavier, cat or Oscar?
Well, the Oscar was heavier. The cat was crazier.
Okay, yeah, well, it's heavier than a cat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So more than 5 pounds.
Yeah. Definitely.
Wow.
Why don't we do the Entertainment Report? We're going to talk about Tyra and some of his escapades with her.
But uh-oh.
Laurent and the Entertainment Report.
Alrighty, GLAAD, along with many others in Hollywood, is demanding an apology from Newsweek magazine for a recent story that the group says suggested gay actors can't play straight characters. Some Hollywood stars have blasted the writer of the article. His name is Raman Setuda, in which he states that it was okay for straight actors to play gay roles, but it's rare for someone to pull off the trick in reverse. He went on to say that Sean Hayes' his latest performance in the Broadway show comes off as wooden and insincere and act like he's trying to hide something, which of course he is. And that's a quote from the writer. Ryan Murphy, creator of the hit series Glee, called for a boycott of the magazine and until it apologizes to the gay readers. He also said that brave actors out there who are cruelly singled out in this damaging, needlessly cruel, and mind-blowing bigoted piece.
Well, and Kristen Chenoweth put out a statement, too.
Yeah, a lot of people
have.
It was
in the play that he was bashing. She was leading with Sean Hayes. And, you know, she's a Christian singer, but she's been to the Cathedral of Hope many, many times and is very supportive of our community. And she just thought it was outrageous to say that gay actors can't play straight characters. I mean, we see Neil Patrick Harris on How I Met My Mother.
And he mentions him in the article. I don't think this. I wouldn't call this article homophobic. I would call it incredibly demeaning to the actors that he points out. And it's not accurate in my opinion, but he does state something that we've all been asking for a very long time. Why is that? Why don't gay actors get to play straight roles? And I think it's because, I'm not saying I agree with it, but Hollywood apparently thinks the way this guy thinks. And he's saying that whenever you look at Sean Hayes, you can't get out of your mind, oh, he's really gay. Now, again, I'm not saying I agree with it, but apparently a lot of Hollywood casting directors think the same way because they don't cast openly gay actors in leading straight roles.
I think therein lies the key. But
yeah, I was just going to say, I just saw the show and was interested in this and read all of this before. And I think that the audience, I saw it on a matinee, and mm-hmm. the audience was entirely filled with grandmas from New Jersey who thought Sean Hayes could do no wrong on stage. And I thought he did a tremendous job.
And I'm sure
so,
he did.
Yeah, I think that, like, I don't know what show this guy saw.
Yeah. Well, it did get mediocre reviews, actually. And for a whole bunch
of
reasons.
Yeah, I don't think that the show... Yeah. Actually, I write about theater on my blog, abcityblog.com, mm-hmm. where you can buy the book. And I wrote that I don't think the show is terrific. I think the show is problematic. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have anything to do with Sean Hayes. Like, I think he's tremendous. And I don't think the audience for a second didn't buy him kissing the two female leads that are in the show with him. Like, right. I think it totally worked fine.
One of the things... I don't remember if it was Kristen Chenoweth who pointed this out or somebody else, but... What they're asking is, you know, you're saying you don't believe when he kisses her, but do you really believe that if it was a straight guy he's kissing me because we're romantically involved? We're not.
It's called acting.
Playing the role.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, he also points out when straight actors play gay roles, they're seen as brave. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not the reverse. And he's right about that. I'm not saying it's right, but that's the way it's perceived.
Do you see a gay actor or a straight actor playing gay as being brave?
No, I don't.
But I don't either.
But that's how a lot of other people do.
I see, what's his name, who played Will Truman, mm-hmm. as being rich. He made a lot of money.
Well, yeah, I think the weird thing he does in this article, too, is he picks and chooses who he wants to mm-hmm. focus on, which I think is the really... You know, like, he doesn't talk about Cheyenne Jackson, who plays straight on Broadway all the time. He doesn't talk about Raiola Sparza, who was in a big Broadway show where he came out right before that, and that didn't have any problems. Like, it just seems odd to me, the way he went about it. Well, and poor Jonathan Groff. Like, he picks on Jonathan Groff in the piece for no apparent reason, who I think is somebody who recently came out that we should be supportive of.
Exactly. He's sort of like a personal vendetta almost attitude
right.
toward him in the article.
And he points out some of the differences with lesbians, lesbian actresses like Portia de Rossi, who, you know, because she's lipstick, you know, people can say, okay, we out. I can believe that.
But, I think the key here is when you say openly gay. Because and it's about people's perceptions. Because if there's any basis to it, it's about straight people's perceptions of gay people.
Absolutely.
And if they know they're gay. Because Rock Hudson, for years, was the leading man. And it was only after he died that it really became openly known.
It's funny because he mentions him, too.
You know, but I think he's a prime example. And yet you have someone like Cherry Jones, who very comfortably plays many, right. many, many roles. You know, where she's involved.
I love her as the president of the United States.
Yes,
in 24. Well, she's kind of turned bad now, but
no. But I think you're right. It's all about perception, Patty. And again, I'm not saying I agree with what his perception is, but apparently, a lot of Hollywood execs agree with that perception.
You know, well,
because they do not cast openly gay actors, especially men, in leading straight roles. They just don't.
Well, a lot of people, I mean, and I think the openly gay thing has a lot to do with it. Because, for example, I think most people in our community would assume Jodie Foster's gay.
Right.
I mean, it's just open secret in Europe. You know, it's reported on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, she was sort of a really awkward romantic presence in Contact. She had that no chemistry there with Matthew McConaughey. But
oh,
then you
yeah.
turned to something like Maverick, and she just gelled with Mel Gibson, and you could see a little electricity there. And yet, I don't think people would say, oh, she's a horrible actress, or that, wow, a gay person can't play straight.
Oh, I wouldn't say
it's just
that.
Chemistry between actors.
Exactly. Absolutely.
The other one that we always use, Rupert Everett, who always complains, oh, I'm never hired because I'm gay. And the three of us have talked about this lots of times. We just don't think he's that good.
And it's funny. He uses Rupert Everett to prove his point in this article. Yeah. It's very interesting. Wanda Sykes' late night show has been canceled after just one season on Fox. The late night talk show started off strong but tumbled in the ratings as the season went on and fell below the performance of the predecessor, Matt TV. And last, Facebook was the apparent driving successful force behind getting Betty White to host Saturday Night Live. Now there's a new Facebook campaign to get Cam and Mitchell, that's the gay couple from Modern Family, to kiss. And there's been a little controversy because their most recent episode, which came on last week, they're in an airport and Cam's sister... when she greets her husband, they kiss. When he greets his partner Mitchell, they just give each other a hug. So, you know, different things like, where was the kiss?
Oh, the irony.
So there's
Cameron's character. He's played by a straight guy.
Yes. So that there.
I think he does the.
Oh, I think he does a really good job. I think he's a good job. And so now there's.
It's called being a good actor.
So there's a campaign called Let Cam and Mitchell Kiss on Modern Family.
Let me ask John Polk, since he lives in a sitcom, do you and Juan Pablo.
I love Modern Family, by the way.
I do too.
I do too.
But do you and Juan Pablo kiss?
Do we kiss? Yes, and all the time in our sitcom.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's
yes.
Cute.
Juan Pablo good. Just emailed me a picture of sitting with Frida. Watching, listening to the show right now while in New York.
Frida's the dog.
Frida's my dog.
And yeah. Juan Pablo is your...
So shout out to Juan Pablo, who's my partner. Yeah.
And that's really
We have the same name, right?
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding.
It's like these couples that have Dave and David.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That's too cute.
Juan Pablo.
Yeah, John Paul and Juan Pablo. It's actually, people ask me, it's in the book. I write a whole chapter about meeting him in the book, and it happens to be my favorite episode in the book. We met online. And we actually didn't know each other's name at all. And I had sort of, we kind of got off to a bad start because I thought he was teasing me about my name. And it turned out that we actually had the same name and I agreed to go on a date with him. And the rest was history. I mean, how could you not go out on a date with someone who basically has your same name?
Exactly. It gives a whole new meaning to J2P2.
Yes. People are. Some people call us JP squared. Some people call us the JPs. And
were you both named after the Pope?
No. See, that's the name thing that gets me every time. That's what got me into trouble. Like, I've been picky about that my whole life.
I was just asking.
I know. It's like,
do here. We clear up misconceptions. I don't want anybody to
And let's be thankful Benedict didn't become JP3, because that would just be horrible.
Well, let's be thankful that he wasn't, that they weren't both named Benedict.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's it.
Well, before we come back with stories about Tyra, because we have to do Tyra. Let's go to our break. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly on 89.3 FM HD1 in Dallas right after this.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM, the voice of the people. This is the only station in the Metroplex that can say, don't touch that dial, we'll change the station for you. KNON is the open mic for the whole community. Do you want to keep that mic on for this show? What you're listening to right now will only be here in the future if you pick up the phone now and call 972-647-1893. Your money matters. Two-thirds of KNON's budget comes from you, the KNON listener. If you've done your part, we thank you. If you're waiting for the pledge drive to finish, you might wait out the existence of this show on KNON. Do your part while you can. Call now, 972-647-1893.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
It's time for
Those Darn Heterosexuals.
A 20-year-old straight girl was outraged when she saw her photo on TV in a crime news segment, so she marched herself down to the police station to find out why. After questioning and viewing surveillance tape, she was arrested for robbing a beauty shop. Oh, that's why my picture was on TV.
Wow. A retired insurance underwriter in England filed a lawsuit against a golf club after he slipped on a wet floor. He claims the club should have posted a warning. The wet floor was in the shower room.
Australian Glenn Armstrong was just trying to prove something to his wife. Police caught him photographing boys in a restroom. This heterosexual was just trying to prove to his wife that most boys in Brisbane aren't circumcised.
A woman in you have to prove those things to your wife.
Sometimes. I love Australians.
A woman in Owensboro, Kentucky, who was arrested for public intoxication, had the charge of assaulting a police officer added when she pointed her lactating breast at the officer and squirted her in the face. And that's this week's
those darn heterosexuals.
Oh my God, where do you find these? I find them on a Fox News
website.
By the
way,
actually,
for people who don't know, they're written like they're Chinese fortunes here that we read out loud.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, you should start putting these in cookies.
Yeah.
It would be a nice treat.
You could market that. Yeah,
those darn heterosexual cookies.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. A fun end to any gay event.
It is. So tell us about Tyra. She's sweet on the air, but she must be a raging lunatic, right? Tyra,
especially because she's a supermodel.
Right,
and they're all divas and you know, bees.
No, Tyra is exactly like she appears on TV. She's a wonderful listener. We had a great time together. She was super caring with me. And she I learned so much from her. I was with her for about 6 months on
what
book
you mean
tour.
To say is she was a recurring character.
She was a recurring character. At one point I thought she was taking over the show. She was like one of those characters that became a fan favorite, and she was around all the time. So I first went to on book tour. I actually when I got the assignment, it was one of those things where the boss calls and says, like, I need you to get up and interview with one of my girls, because you represented a lot of like diva ladies, need someone with a little bit more experience, and I need you to go up and interview with her. And I was like, oh my God, please tell me it's Cher. And he said, we don't represent Cher. It's Tyra. And I was like, Ty who? And he said, Tyra Banks, the black supermodel.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I have no idea who that is.
Where were you?
This was
to
before
be fair,
her show.
I mean, this is before the show. This is before she was going to be America's Next Top Media Mogul. She was a supermodel. And most people did know her. Like, she'd been on the cover of GQ and Sports Illustrated whatever. So in the cab on the way up there to the hotel, I gave myself a talking to. It's like, it doesn't matter. Like, this is your shot at the big time. Like, you've basically been doing hand holding with celebrities, C level celebrities, and like, this is it, right? And so I get there, and she's like, she can eat, man. Like, it's a breakfast buffet at the hotel, and she's grazing the breakfast buffet. And I'm like, I've always, until recently, been like 23 pounds above my goal weight my entire life. And I'm like, looking at this supermodel having everything she wants on the buffet. And she turns to me and goes, I just have one of those metabolisms. And I was like, I want to hit you, but I was like, okay. And we sat down. She's like, okay, first question, are you gay? And I spit my coffee out, and not because I've ever really been in the closet, but like, what's that for a first line in a job interview?
So she didn't even beat around a bush about it.
Yeah. And I said, I was like, what? And she's like, well, we're just going to be together a lot in some really tight, close situations, and I can't really be worried about you. And she like looks down at her bosom. Like, I know what she's talking about. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she goes, do you even know who I am? And my mind is spinning, right? Because anytime a celebrity asks you that, like, this can go wrong really quickly. And I just...
It's like the airport thing.
Right. It sounds like it's like, about to.
You know, anyone who says it to a club bouncer or to a gate agent, like, you know, if they have to ask, then you already know the answer. So I just, like, I took a deep breath and I looked at her and I said, look, actually, I don't know who you are. But that means that I'm going to be way more honest with you than anyone else. And wouldn't you rather have someone with you who's honest with you than someone who's just yesing you all the time? And she looked at me and she said, girl, get ready to go on the Tyra tour. And so we...
Love that.
So we immediately had a really good rapport with each other. And I traveled with her on book tour. She wrote a book on female, on teen self-esteem called Tyra's Beauty Inside and Out. And so I'd say I learned everything that I know about book tour from being on the road with Tyra.
And let me just interject here that you are on book tour. This is the first stop on the book tour. It was supposed to start this week. And I talked to John Paul and said, ooh, can you be here for our Sunday show? So he came in early to make a first stop.
I love it. Of course I want to be here. Yes, I'm here and on book tour. I'm going to be on Tuesday.
The book is?
The book is Alphabet City, My So-Called Sitcom Life. You
That's
can
right.
buy
you
it.
You have to put in the name I know. Of the book on every...
I know.
You have to tell these publicists these things.
You can find out more on my website, which is abcityblog.com. You can also buy it here locally at Legacy Books up in Plano. And you can also buy it on Amazon and BN.com, those kinds of things.
Or you can go to a John Paul event.
Yes.
Hotel Palomar, you're going to be there Tuesday from 6:30 to 7:30.
Yep.
Speaking and...
Yeah, I'm going to be speaking, telling more stories from the book. My tour is sponsored by Kimpton Hotels, which owns the Hotel Palomar. I'm traveling to all of their hotels during the month of Gay Pride in June. So you can
or
check
September
me...
in Dallas.
In September in Dallas. And
because
also,
of
one
father.
Of my sponsors is the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. So if you come to the event on Tuesday and make a donation to the task force, you can buy a book for a discounted price. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty good deal. And you can buy one directly from me anytime you see me around town.
So that means you're going to go to the Rouge at Rouge in DC.
Yes. Yeah. They have many hotels in DC. I'm going to be there for like 3 or 4 days. So they're very interesting as a sponsor. I know we're off the, we'll go back to Tyra in a second. But Kimpton Hotels, you know, really does.
Us meander off topic.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen on this show.
They do such great work with the gay and lesbian community and have known for their marketing and all their efforts that they do. And so they were looking for something to ramp up their efforts during Gay Pride Month. They always do a thing called the Summer Pride Package, which is like a special offer. And you get all these gifts. They're giving away an excerpt of Alphabet City in the book, in their basket that you get. But they asked me if I would travel around and speak to their guests. They do a wine hour, you know, because you've stayed there, right? So you go to this wine hour, and so they're having me appear there. It's a great way for me to, like, develop and new contacts and meet new readers.
And one of the things that was, I think, in The Voice and a couple of other places I saw it, it said $35 to attend the event. The event's free.
Yeah.
$35 is a donation that would go to the Gay and Lesbian Task Force in Washington. So,
yes. And with that, you get a copy of the book. But you can show up and hear me talk at the event and buy a book. And yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And you can just get the book or you can make the donation, which or you don't have to buy the book and just hear John Paul speak. Tyra.
Buy the book. Tyra. So Tyra and I, so I was on book tour with her for a long time. And, you know, I learned great things from her. And then I had a little bit of a break. Funny thing was we traveled through... strange things happen when you're on book tour. I was with her for so long, I started to feel really lonely while I was on the road, and because I felt like I never had a love interest in my sitcom, so I didn't even get to kiss anybody, right? Because I didn't have a love interest. And so I fell in love, he didn't know it, with this guy who was the special services agent for American Airlines at O'Hare Airport. Uh-huh. His job was to pick us up in a little golf cart when we arrived on a plane and put us in a golf cart and take us to the Admiral's Club. The theory being that if you're in a golf cart going 2 miles per hour, the fans will like not talk to you. And I just developed a crush on him. And the last time we were on book tour, so it got to be a joke with me and Tyra, because she would say, "Are you gonna see your boy Lee when we're there? I hope he's there." And sure enough, the last time we were there, Lee picked us up, and Tyra, like I said, liked to eat. And she wanted him to take us to McDonald's in the airport. Yeah. And he looked at me like, is she crazy? Like, and I was like, no, it's okay. She's hungry. Like, we'll be fine. So he dropped us off there, and we're at the McDonald's, and she's ordering cheeseburger and fries. And this crowd starts to appear around us. And it was like a snowball effect. Like, we got our food, and by the time we got to the gate, there was this mass of people around us. And as soon as... And Tyra's just oblivious to it all. She's, like, flipping through Vogue and eating her French fries, and, like... And people start coming up and, like, Tyra, can you sign my boarding pass? Tyra, can you do this? And I have to stand up and say, no, please, like, leave us alone. And I start to have a breakdown because I'm so tired. And I was like, I always thought that I was Kevin Costner on The Bodyguard, and she was like my Whitney Houston. And I was not doing a good job of being Kevin Costner at this point. Like, I was literally about to start crying. And then I hear this beep, 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 beep. And it's Lee in the golf cart. And the crowd parts like the Red Sea. And he's come to save me from the thing. And I look over at Tyra. So I jump in the cart and I reach out my hand to Tyra. And she's like, no, y'all go on. I'll be fine here. But you need some time with Lee.
And he
y'all left her there
into the distance.
And so I was like, but I'm not going to see you again.
And you drive off into the
we
sunset
drive off
at
2 miles
into the
sunset,
an hour.
Like at 2 miles an hour.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah. And he said to me, we park in some like little part of O'Hare, and I'm eating my cheeseburger. And he leans over and he's like, can I ask you a question? Are Tyra's boobs real? And I said, I get this question a lot, and I always say, you know, I've seen them up close and personal, and as far as I can tell, they're real, and she's pretty genuine. So
they are real. Great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Funny enough, when I was on the plane on the way down here, American Way has Tyra on the cover of it. And I was like, I'm back on book tour in some funny way with Tyra.
She's on book tour with you.
Yeah, exactly. Now she's on my book tour. So, yeah.
Have you heard from any of the people that you write about?
I have. Well, funny thing is that Page Six, which is the big gossip column, wrote a little little piece about Alphabet City and took out of context something that I wrote about Tyra, which is that. One of the things that I learned on book tour is that, like, she likes to eat chips with Alestra in it that causes intestinal distress. Now, Tyra talks a lot about her own intestinal distress, so I didn't think this was a big deal. But it got picked up in a very snarky way around
page
the country.
Six is known to
yeah.
do.
Yes.
And, well, what happened was it just like a game of telephone. It went around the world, and suddenly the headline was Tyra's ex-publicist has an axe to grind, which if you read the book, that's totally not what it's about. And so I did hear from her people who were a little worried about what was in the book, but no. But other people who've in the book, like, well, you know, my partner's in the book, and mm-hmm. so he's, I hear from him all the time about
yeah, well, I'm sure yeah. he had veto power on some of the stories you were about to tell.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, do you have, in your sitcom of life,
yes,
do you have a live audience or canned laughter?
I don't do canned laughter, like, no, and because I edit the show, so, so, yeah, it's more like Modern Family. It's a little bit more like Modern Family mm-hmm. that way.
Yeah, yeah, and
have you heard from any other, like, you know, since you are in the New York area, I would say that this book is, like, kind of the antithesis of something like Michael Musto would do. Have you heard from any other gossip columnists, like, why can't we didn't give us more dirt or anything like that?
I think people are surprised that it's not snarky, but I think that, like, that we've talked a lot about the celebrities, but really the book is much more than just celebrity. It's really much more about my journey from becoming, like, this fresh Southerner to a wizened New Yorker, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's about, really, the challenges that any young person goes through following a dream. And so I think when people actually read it, they start to realize, like, this is actually much more here than just... The celebrities are just, like, guest stars that come in that,
yeah.
you know, teach me something. But I think some gossip columns and stuff who have read it were like, oh, I was expecting it to be a little bit more... dishy than this, but that's not who I am, and that's not who Mary Tyler Moore is. Like, that's not, you know.
So what you really need in your future of your book tour is to piss off Perez Hilton.
Oh.
And then it would just, you know, it would,
it would be everywhere.
It would go everywhere.
You know, because he's yeah. he's controversial. He really yeah. is. People go, I will read anything he bashes.
Yeah. Well, I have a really, it's funny, like, I think people today really do, you know, the whole gossip, nasty gossip stuff is one thing, but I think there are people out there who, like, don't necessarily want to hear all of that, right? They, you know. And so I have a very, like, as I said, like, I have a blog, abcityblog.com, where chapters are available, and it's a very positive, upbeat thing, and I developed a very quick, fast following around the world, and about half my readers are straight women. And who are interested in celebrity stuff, but they're in a positive, you know, kind of a positive way. And they email me. One of the things that I'm doing on book tour is that my fans around the U.S. can email me if I'm going to be in their city. And if they have a book club, I'll come up here at their book club with an cool. Alphabet City book party in a box, which has everything you need to throw an Alphabet City book party, including wine and food and Alphabet City books and me. And like, so one of the places that I'm doing tomorrow is the TCU Chi Omega Sorority Alumni Book Club Association. How fun
wow.
is that? Like,
that's
I love
awesome.
Having that kind of, yeah,
I don't even
diverse...
remember that name.
I know, right? Like, I have to think about it all of the time. So, but, like, there's a group of people who, like, just love the basic story of, like, a kid moving and, you know, following the dream and that that celebs are nice mm-hmm. at the end
that's
of the day.
That's cool. Yeah, and our, for our listeners, that big thud back there was David. David wanted to see how heavy the trash can was.
Yeah, he
threw
it
at me.
That
was his whoopee moment.
Right. I'm one celebrity that I should mention that is really lovely and should be known for her humanitarian work is Ashley Judd. I end up working for Conde Nast Traveler and traveling the world and getting into a lot of crazy situations with with traveling the world for them. But I got to go to South Africa with Ashley Judd to see her work on behalf of YouthAIDS. Which is a wonderful organization that works to end HIV transmission in youth around the world. And I mean, I'd worked with a lot of celebrities at that point, and so I was a little suspect of, like, what does she really know about this? And she and I spent the afternoon in an AIDS hospice and orphanage, and she took me from bedside to bedside and taught me how to stroke, hold the kids and stroke their arms, that it might be the last human touch that they have because they were dying. And I just connected with her on that level, that she was really, she was in it. And she said to me, I said, isn't this strange to, like, be doing a cover photo shoot for a luxury magazine, but also doing this AIDS work? And she said that that there's not a choice between them, that she uses her fame in order to draw attention to the problem. And as long as you're doing that, then you're doing good in this world. So I really have a lot of respect for her. She's a really great humanitarian. Mm-hmm. A great organization.
We're almost out of time. You will be Hotel Palomar Tuesday, 6:30 to 7:30. There is no cost for the event. It is a fundraiser, though, for the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, which does lots of great work up in Washington.
And Hotel Palomar is over in Uptown, kind of off Cedar
Springs. On Mockingbird and Palomar. It's Palomar, on Mockingbird and Central. Central Expressway.
Yeah, it's right across the way from Mockingbird Station. Yes.
Okay, I was thinking
diagonal from the George Bush Library, if that helps you.
And you can always log on to my website, abcityblog.com, to find out more and buy the book.
John Paul. Right?
I can't wait to read it.
Would you watch the book? Just watch the book.
Yeah, watch it.
There you go.
It's great seeing you again.
Thank you so much. It's so great meeting you. Fun. It was great, you guys. Thank you.
And your next book tour, because you are working on your next book already.
Called 40 Love. Yes. See? People want another one. I'm already working on it.
That's tennis. Is that tennis?
It is tennis.
Yes, it is. It's a lot of tennis.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
The story will have to wait until the next episode.
I'll tell you about it next time.
Until next season. That will be on next. He'll be a guest star. Next week, our guest is Raphael McDonald from the AIDS Resource Center, and we'll be back. Yeah.
Oh, and we'll hopefully be able to talk about President Obama's Supreme Court nominee, Elena Kagan, and lots of controversy around her, which we didn't hit today, so maybe we'll do that next week, too.
We will do that next week. We are going out with music from
Storm Lee.
Gonna go insane. Oh, come on, listen to what I gotta say.